Hello, everybody. I'm Kevin Winder, and thanks for tuning in to another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. And like always, I have a question for you. What does it mean to live like a sinner? You know, all religions have names for those that they see as outside their religious tribe. In Islam, they call them infidels. Christianity calls them unbelievers. Hinduism and Buddhism call them the unenlightened. And Jews always called them Gentile sinners. In today's episode, we're going to see how the gospel freed religious and non-religious people from compliance to religious law and rules. And this freedom caused them to be seen as living like sinners. Join me now as we explore what this means and why this is a central theme of Paul, not only to the church in Galatia, but throughout the New Testament. It just might be that living as Paul describes, like a sinner, is the ability to see beyond everything. Hello, everybody. Thanks so much for coming back to another edition of Beyond Everything Radio. I'm your host, Kevin Winder. So glad to have you here. Welcome to the program. Welcome to Sunday. You know, folks, I like to serve the world as an online pastor, author, and uncoach, among many other things that I do. And I just want to say thank you to all the new folks that are signing up for my weekly newsletter, Winder's Windshield, for all the folks who are signing up on the podcast. I love to see this growth. I appreciate your feedback. It's been higher than it has been in several months. And I think it has to do with the nature of the series that we're in. Folks, we are focusing right now on the book of Galatians. And if you're new to this program, do not run away assuming that this is your typical Bible study, because it's not. I'm actually pulling out many, many themes that are in Paul's writings. And they kind of focus their attention in a heavy kind of way in the book of Galatians. And so I'm kind of letting those come out through the text in larger themes. So the study is done a little bit different, and I'm kind of creating a curiosity that I know that you are responding to, and it has given a lot of you a lot of questions, maybe more so than answers. Hang with me, please. This is a series that is going to really open up your mind. It's going to really widen your framework of understanding. And in order for me to do that, I have to bring out the big sledgehammer, and occasionally I have to knock down a support structure in your thinking. And the way I do that, as you know if you're familiar with this program, is I just kind of take a little shot at certain things that we hold dear and near to our heart. It sounds wrong, always comes across as though I'm saying something completely wrong. I don't do it just to be catchy or cute or whatever. It's because I want you to get your attention on this area and to think about it. It will transform your life if you work through the questions, as I have and many of others have. And today, we are looking at basically the fourth or fifth installment in this series in the book of Galatians. And today, it's called Live Like Sinners. That's right. Live Like Sinners, episode number 169. So, like I've been saying, American Christians, you know, we're talking about your fundamental evangelical modern Christianity that has a fish on the back of their car, a K-Love sticker, you know, that kind of individual, right? So often in this framework, Christians forget that the early church was made up of Jews and non-Jews, right? The early church was made up of people with different religious frameworks. Let that marinate a little bit, okay? And 2 weeks ago, I showed how the belief in the gospel didn't require a conversion from Judaism into this new thing called Christianity. Christianity wasn't a religion. It didn't require conversion from any religion like we see today. Like, believers were actually free to remain within the framework from which they came. You see Paul talk about this in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, 20, where he actually says, just remain in the state that you were called, right? Now, the gospel, however, does, and it certainly did back then, reshape the way people believe and the way people practice. That's important, because it's not just saying we're throwing out religion now, do whatever you want. What happens is this reshaping how everything is understood. Now, if you look at today's modern Christianity, what I often call churchianity, it requires conversion away from previous systems into a new so-called Christian religion, right? If you've ever been to a church service and they've asked you to reflect on your life, they're inviting you to become a Christian, and they see that as a conversion from whatever you were before. Maybe you were an atheist, you become a Christian. Maybe you were a Buddhist and you change religions. Maybe you were a Muslim or whatever it is. The goal in modern Christianity is to get you to convert from your religion or framework into the Christian religion or framework. This is not what they were doing in the early church. But this is a transaction-based system now, right? I mean, people in modern Christianity are not free to practice how they want. They have to come on and adopt a new set of rules, a new set of dogmas, a new set of theologies, you know, applicable practices. These are the things you can do now as a Christian. Before this, you can't do this stuff anymore, right? You have to have a new set of assumptions about the world, right? About people who are different than you. You have innie and outies. You're now the star-bellied sneech who's the best on the beach. And this, you know, has basically replaced gospel freedom with a religion. And I like to call that religion, as I said, churchianity. Because this is not Christianity as it was taught by Paul. This is the whole point of the book of Galatians. Paul is looking at this church and saying, why have you retreated back into religion? Why have you taken the freedom that the gospel offered you and now turned it into a set of rules and obedience and puritanical, you know, moral codes, right? See, the test for Paul's gospel is its ability to complete a person rather than convert a person. And whenever we read about the so-called conversion of Paul, what we realize is, oh, he was this very Pharisaical Jew who persecuted the church, and then the Spirit of Christ gets a hold of him, changes his heart, and now he wants to go and promote the gospel for the church. Right? But he didn't give up his Judaism. He still identifies himself as a Jew. You ever notice that? But it's a different framework of belief, because now he's free from all of the religious law and rule that Judaism had burdened him with. And see, Gentiles were considered by the Jews to be the sinners, right? You see that in Galatians 2:15. Paul himself says, if you're a Gentile sinner, right, kind of quoting them. And it's exactly how the modern church refers to unbelievers as non-Christians. It's how Jews refer to Gentiles. Islam refers to non-Muslims as infidels. The Eastern religions refer to people who don't meditate as unenlightened, right? And so the church in Galatia was really this very diverse mix of Jews and Gentiles, or religious people and non-religious people, who are now free from obedience to religious law. What that meant is that the gospel freed people to live as Jesus did. Now, if you don't know what that means, maybe you could go back and listen to my series last summer on the forerunner of subversion in the series that followed, because this is a story about Jesus and the miracles of Jesus and how he subverted religion. He subverted all institutional power, starting with his family, his community, his friends, his religion, and his government. And in the end, those are the powers that put him on the cross. Nonetheless, the gospel was this liberating idea. And you see, people in the early church, they could eat what they wanted now. They could eat with whomever they wanted. They were free from the perfunctory traditions like circumcisions or ceremonial washings. They were free from having to do all these weird rituals on the Sabbath, and having to attend these elaborate feasts. They didn't have to find goats and birds and things to go and sacrifice in the local temple. They were free from all of this. And so from the Jews' perspective, and basically all religious people's perspective and standards, the early church was living like sinners, because sinners didn't pay attention to all that stuff. And so here's this new group, you know, following God, and they're not doing any of that stuff. So they were living like sinners. And so the gospel subverts these institutional powers, these institutional rules, and by stepping aside from those, it liberates the people who actually realize that this ritual is mostly just smoke and mirrors. If I go up and have them kill this cow, I'm symbolically putting my sins on the cow, and then the cow dies, and, you know, I go home free holding this, you know, bridle that I carried the cow in with, and somehow that symbolizes an inner purification with God. And now this new Christian perspective is that, well, you don't need all that. God has already made it, you know, made you right with himself. And that's a hard one for modern religion to get their heads around, isn't it? I mean, think about it. Not all so-called believers can turn loose of tradition very easily, especially without losing some sense of propriety. I mean, a lot of people really are attached to the church framework because deep down inside, they just feel like it's the right thing to do. And when they get there, they sing the songs and they feel really good. And the Spirit attends some of those services and it speaks to them. And so they see that system as 100% the delivery system. And they defend it, you know, and to the end. And I'm not here to erode it or diminish it or say it's not valuable. What I'm here to say is that it's not necessary for you to have those experiences in that close proximity to God. You see, some of the Galatians there were so fundamental. They were insisting on circumcision. They were insisting on separation between Jews and Gentiles during certain meals. And when Paul sees this, he literally blows his stack. You know, he gets on their case because he knows they're missing the gospel. And in Galatians 2:14, it says this. Paul says, "When I saw that their conduct was not in step with the truth of the gospel," in other words, their conduct is not that they're being bad. Their conduct is that they're acting in religious ways, upholding laws and traditions, right? He says, "I said to Cephas," or at Peter, "before everybody, if you, though a Jew, live like a Gentile," like if you live like a sinner and not like a Jew, "how can you force Gentiles to live like Jews?" You see, Peter, whenever the Jews were around, he would make the Gentiles, you know, separate. He would kind of retreat back into the perfunctory form and function of religious law to kind of keep that propriety. And Paul is like, dude, that is not in step with the truth of the gospel. In other words, if you now have the freedom of a sinner, how can you ask sinners to become imprisoned in a religion? That was Paul's question. Think about that. That's a powerful question. You see, we see this thought in other places in Paul's writings, like in Romans chapter 7, verse 9, he says, "I was once alive apart from the law, but when the commandment came, sin came alive and I died." You see, Paul is not suggesting that we are free to sin. He's not saying, look, you're not under religion anymore, so just go out and behave however the heck you want. In fact, the chapter 5 coming up in a couple weeks here, we're going to really see what he's getting at. And he's not saying you're free to sin. He's saying you're free from the penalty under the law that sin impugns to you. Right, he says in Galatians 3:22, and also in verse 23, he says, "Before faith came, we were held captive under the law. We were imprisoned until this coming faith would be revealed." Right? Thus, both the Gentile sinner and the religious devout are both imprisoned people. They're both imprisoned apart from faith. And so it's not the religion that actually helps you, saves you, purifies you, makes you right with God. It's not a stairway to heaven. It's not a performance art that you can do and God smiles and says, okay, because you did all those things, you gave that money, you lit that candle, you said that prayer, now we're good. It's that God is good, that he just erased it all, right? He put it all on his son. And because of that work of Christ, your sin has been separated from you. Your penalty has been paid. And this goes for all people. And this is news that's way too good to believe. Why? Because the religious people want to add something to it. They want to say, well, that's true. Yeah, Christ did die for your sin, but you have to make him Lord of your life. You have to choose to accept him into that little imaginary door in your heart. You have to do something on your part to show that you truly have the faith to believe all that. And basically, they recreate a system of rules and laws that make salvation the work of man. Paul is absolutely against that. Of course, non-religious people don't get it either. They struggle to believe. They're like, why would a God do that? You know, I just have accepted the fact that I'm just this outcast, this sinner. I've done bad things. And why would a God love me enough to do anything like that? What does he want from me? How do I, you know, I mean, I don't get it. I'm not going to become like one of you religious people. So what good am I to God? And they refuse to believe it. The gospel is that hard to believe because for both the religious and the irreligious, it's way too good to be true. And so how do we become free of the penalizing power of both sin and the law? You see, it's not just the Gentile sinner who's being penalized for their sin, right? No. It's all the religious people are being penalized for their adherence to the law. And Paul asks, is the law sin then in Romans 7? And he said, no. It's not that the law is sin. It's just that the law serves as a guardian, like in Galatians 3:24. He says the law is just there to help keep you from completely falling on your face, from having civilization completely erode into the worst possible thing it can be. Faith is believing that through this justification, this Christ putting things right with us, that we now have no legal obligation to God. We have no more gap between us. We no longer need a religious practice. Why? Because faith itself is the practice. Just trusting that it's true for you is all the practice that needs to take place. And that's a very wide, inclusive message. But that's not all the gospel is. Gospel is not just a big, wide, inclusive message. There's a part of it that gets much more narrow, much more focused. And we're going to look at that in the coming chapters. But for now, this is the thing that Paul is wrestling with and trying to help the Galatians return to. Because somewhere, somehow, they got off track and started buying back into religious law. They took this free, wide-open message, and they turned it back into a works righteousness deliverance program. And so why do religions use law? You ever think about that? Why do all the religions that you know use rules and law, guilt and fear, to modify your behavior? Why do they do that instead of just saying, have faith and just work through love? Faith working through love is a completely new paradigm from obedience to law and rule. It's not obligation. It actually is a reframing of the motivations of the heart so that you're not doing things because you have to. You're doing things because you get to, because you want to. Right? And Paul says that all things, in 1 Corinthians 6:12, he says all things, and I do believe he means all things, are permissible. In other words, there isn't a law that stands against you and alcohol, or you and a certain dating practice, or you and a certain, you know, whatever it is. Now, I know churches have come along and put up a million fences to keep you away from getting stained by the evil, dirty world that's out there. But the gospel says all things are allowable for you, but not all things are helpful. You have to get part two. Not everything is helpful. And you see, my best guess is that religions use law, fear, guilt for behavior modification because the externals are measurable and they can't really measure the inside. And this is the problem. You know, religion likes outsides, externals. It likes performance. It likes to measure you against everybody else and decide who's an innie and who's an outie. And this new gospel message is saying, you know, there's something inside you called the Spirit that knows when you've had enough, right? You can go and enjoy a piece of cheesecake with no sin, with no guilt, with no fear, with no harm. But there's a point at which you have 2, 3, 4, 10 pieces of cheesecake, at which point you know You know when too much cheesecake is too much for you, don't you? If you're a diabetic, if you have certain health problems, if you're trying to make changes to your life, maybe even a couple bites of cheesecake is too much. If that's not a concern, then maybe you can enjoy two pieces of cheesecake. Maybe you're a runner and you need those extra calories or something else, right? So every single person is going to have a different line within themselves, and that's the freedom of the gospel. This is what Paul is trying to develop within the people. This is faith working through love, right? But not everybody gets that. We have to just have a no cheesecake rule. It just keeps it easier. It keeps things fair. You know, no alcohol, no divorces, no gay people, no this, no that. We're going to have 15 position papers on everything we're against, right? That's what it's become. That's churchianity, folks. That's not Christianity. Following Christ is not a subscription to Christianity or what we call churchianity. Following Christ is simply faith in Christ, and that's not a contraction of your life experience. It's an expansion of your life through inner and outer personal freedom. So what's happening then is that, you know, the freedom that's offered by the gospel is way too big for the guardian, the rule keeper of religion. Right? The line that the gospel will draw within your heart is far further to the edge of the cliff than the institution wants to put it. The institution wants to put the fence, you know, so far back from the cliff that if you cross the fence, you're still fine. The gospel will put the fence at the very edge of the cliff. And it says, if you go beyond this, then you're not fine. And it allows you the freedom to go all the way to the edge if you want. But you see, that's way, way, way too free for religion. And Gentiles, the non-religious people, the so-called sinners, you know, they already possess the freedom from religion. They don't obey those fences that religion puts out there, do they? Right? They go all the way to the cliff and beyond. And the reason they go beyond is because they don't have the same kind of fence inside. Or if they do, they ignore it for their own pleasure or gain. And many reject the gospel because they assume that the gospel is going to curtail the freedom that they already enjoy, right? So the sinners, so to speak, will reject the gospel because they see it as a curtailment of their freedom. It's a contraction of their freedom. And religious people reject the gospel because they see it as it's way too free. It's not, it's unsafe. And modern people see religion as a killjoy. And you know what? They're mostly correct, because the gospel is not a religion. The gospel liberates the sinner from a life of excess. And how does it do that? Well, it's the spirit within you that you pay attention to that said, you know what? Last night with that person that wasn't my spouse, I kind of crossed the line. And I could sense in my heart I was going down a road I don't want to go, right? You pull back. It's the, I stopped with my one piece of cheesecake. I quit after my second beer. I, you know, refrained from driving that fast because I knew it was a violation. You see, you have this internal law that's now coming out, but it's not based on the outside in. It's from the inside out. And so we see here that the gospel liberates the religious person from a life that is wound way too tight and governed by fear into a spacious experience with the world and all that's in it. So what I see happening is as people come out of fundamentalism, they start regaining things like, you mean I can listen to this music? I was always told that was bad music and I just really enjoy it. You mean I can have a beer? I can smoke a cigar? I can go dancing? I can, you know, whatever it is. And all of a sudden that liberation is a joy because they get to experience the world in a new place. And this is really just obedience to Acts 10:15, where it says, what God has made clean, do not call common. And the church does that way too often. God's good world is called evil, depraved, and rotten. Now, there's a point which all good things can go too far and become destructive. The gospel means that we are required to draw the line for ourselves based upon our level of faith. So if you're immature in your faith, and Paul talks about this in Romans 13, then you can't go as far to the cliff. Like, you don't put a toddler right next to the edge of the cliff. You just don't. Until that person grows up, they can go a little bit closer, right? Now, we can go further than we think, but we cannot go as far as is possible. That's what the gospel frees us from. The gospel frees us from going too far, and it frees us from not going far enough. It gives us the space in the middle to live in freedom, because if you go too far, you become captive to the sin, to the cheesecake, to the beer. You stop having that, and it starts having you. So the gospel is this power to individually perceive the difference. See, we're not under the captivity of the law, this external measurement. You know, living like a Gentile sinner is really life on the Autobahn. I don't know if you're familiar with the Autobahn. It's a highway in Germany. It has no speed limit. You are free to drive as fast as you want. And guess what? Everybody on there knows that the people in the left lane are going to be going way faster. So nobody drives in the left lane. You pass a car, you get back in the middle lane. And it works. There's no speed limit, but each one drives according to the skill and respect of others. This is faith working through love. Now, let me ask you this. Does your religion teach that? When's the last time your church taught you that? You see, most religions, and I don't care if you're Muslim or Jewish or Hindu or Buddhist, they set the fence way far back from the cliff as a means to protect you. They want to govern your safety. They want to make sure that you don't have the appearance of evil. Play it safe. Don't play it free. Now, this may help immature people who are immature in their faith or who need a guardian, but it really stunts the growth of those whose faith could be stronger. And you can read about that again in Romans 14, 1 through 12. And religion teaches us to fear God if we are naughty. But the gospel tells us that he, God, has given the whole judgment to the Son in John 5:22. You know what that means? That means there is no judgment of God left over for anybody else. Did you hear me, folks? If you were one of the Gentile sinners and you know you went well beyond the line of the cliff, maybe you're living out there and you recognize it's got a hold on you and you want freedom from it, but you don't know how that works. But you know you can't go back because God has got you. You're going to be facing trouble. Guess what? John 5:22, he's given the whole judgment to the Son. Like, there isn't any judgment left over for you. It's all gone. God is not there judging you. The Spirit of God has come to restore you and to protect you, guide you, lead you, inspire you, fill you. And guess what? It doesn't require a conversion to some religion. It doesn't mean you can't practice where you're at. It simply means you begin to learn a new faith and work through love. That's a whole paradigm shift. And I know some of you are probably thinking, I've lost my cheese off the cracker, but you stick with me through this book and I'll prove to you where I'm coming from. The gospel Paul is defending here requires both the religious and sinner to live freely and responsibly, trusting that God is with all of us. Do you trust that God is with that person over there, that Gentile sinner? Do you trust that God is with that religious person? See, to ignore God while living free is not freedom. That's the very definition of captivity. The message is that we no longer fear a judgmental God or that's out there somewhere looking down on us with a big stink eye, as I like to say. And so we don't need to run from God to experience freedom. We run to God to experience freedom. Instead, we become aware of a loving God, a presence, a spirit within us, which allows us to enjoy all the freedom our faith can tolerate before it can harm us. You see, a mature faith is to have our metaphorical fig leaf removed, right? I'm not afraid of who I am. I'm not afraid of my human frailties and dirtiness and naughtiness anymore. It's totally open. I have nothing to hide before God. Faith is to be fully naked and unashamed before God. Now, until we discover that line, folks, we are enslaved in both extremes. Prisons under the law or under the slave to sin. Neither is free, nor living in faith. Did you get that? So all comers, the religious and the irreligious, start out in prison. And the gospel is the thing that liberates us. So why not test it out this week? Search for your line and honor it. Don't fear it. Find that thing and just go explore it. Don't go too far. Pay attention to the voice, the spirit within you that says that's far enough. If you go too far, expect and embrace the consequences because they will be there. And they're good. They're good for you. Then learn from your mistake. You know, they say that How does this statement go? It says, good judgment comes from experience, and experience comes from bad judgment. So, if you fear the line and you can't see it, you're not living free. As faith grows within you, so does our experience. Our experience with the world, our experience with God, our experience with love. That's the power of the gospel.